You're listening to Thriving Church Leadership, a church board development podcast. A dialogue to encourage church leaders to rise to the noble task of church leadership. Through a series of conversations with godly, experienced, and insightful individuals, we've dived deep into this very unique space of leadership, specifically formal church leadership, such as pastors, elders, deacons, trustees, and board leadership as a whole within the church.
This is Brian Walker, and I'm the host of the Thriving Church Leadership Podcast, and it's a pleasure to be here with you. I'm joined by two good friends and two leaders in ministries and churches, and I would like to introduce them to you today. With me is Pastor Steve Blackwell. He's also Dr. Steve Blackwell, but he prefers to go by Pastor Steve. And Pastor Steve is the lead pastor at Brighton Church, Harvest Church in Brighton, Colorado. And thank you, Pastor Steve. It's good to have you here, brother.
Thank you.
And also is Brett Elder. Brett is a local church leader and ministry leader and just knowledgeable on the topic that we're going to be spending time on today. Brett, hey, thanks for being here with us.
Good to be here.
So, fellas, we're going to get right into the content, and this is exciting content. It's maybe a little bit more complicated of a topic to work toward, and I'm grateful for both of you in your effort in ministry and leadership and your expertise. And the topic we're going to be spending time on is the idea, the conversation of stagnant ministries and how to wrestle with that. In fact, we have wrestled even with the word stagnant. And I wonder, Steve, as we even wrestle with that word, how do you at its very front edge, how do you work through the word of stagnant ministry or stagnant organization?
Well, to be honest, I don't use the word, first of all, because it just has kind of a negative connotation. But I usually use the word plateaus. The churches are plateaued for a while, and I feel like that maybe gives a little more positive. But I think from a definition point of view, stagnation is fine. It's just that it has a connotation of not being a very good thing.
So when you think, Steve, of stagnant organizationally, what does that bring to mind when you think of a stagnant church or a stagnant ministry?
People that don't care, that they feel like they've lost, they have no vision, or are not remembering the vision. maybe that would be a start on it. That they lack the direction and don't even maybe know what the direction should be, and they lack purpose. Mm.
The rudder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brett, when you think of that word, you know, I know we wrestle with even using it in regard to qualifying a ministry or church that way. How do you wrestle with that same thing?
Does seem to have a stigma about it, the word itself, particularly when you're talking about ministry. No one wants to be labeled that, so people are probably secretly listening to this podcast, hoping they're not being seen as stagnant churches. But I think it's a real issue. I would add just another category to that, because I've been involved in maybe slightly larger churches, certainly not mega churches, but it's the category of maybe false growth or perceived growth churches. And I would elaborate on that just simply to say those are churches that feel like they're sort of new and fresh life, but in large part it's because there's a revolving door. So you've got new blood coming in, but you've got others going out the door. Mm. And so there's almost this false positive, not that, and nobody's saying that numerical growth is the goal. But to some extent, I think we get energized by new blood, and we're comfortable with old blood walking out the door. And so all of a sudden, you're sitting pretty much stagnant in terms of numerically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the main focus of this podcast is to address it from a governance, a leadership perspective. You know, this concept of stagnation or negative growth or lack of interest that you guys describe. When you have seen, Steve, I'll ask you, when you've been part of ministries that are wrestling with stagnant or maybe plateaued growth or ministry energy, have you found that there are maybe some leading indicators, some ways to maybe envision it or see it happening in your experience before it even maybe taking place? Is there anything there that you've seen in regard to that?
Now, would you say that from my church's perspective or all churches' perspective?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that is something. There, I'm sure every church has life cycle, and there is probably times of what you might call plateau or stagnation in your own ministry, but maybe even in things you've seen as you have consulted with ministries and churches or organizations around the country.
Yeah, I think, Brian, probably the idea I would have is when I'm seeing without a vision, the people perish. The proverb, and I look at that and I see the discouragement or the lack of direction or feeling like the obstacles are too big to get over. When I see that, or if I'm coaching, I see that from time to time. I'm coaching a couple pastors, and they have small churches, and so they get to thinking, how in the world are we going to ever be able to grow? Mm-hmm. And so my job becomes to encourage them, mm-hmm. keep encouraging them, and realizing they're not stuck like they think they might be stuck.
That brings up the idea of the long game. That we the long game is hard to see, and to help somebody envision a long game. If I'm a church pastor of a church that feels like it's plateaued or stagnate, is there a word of encouragement you can give to a guy who sees that? How to look at the long game in light of the short game, that stagnant feeling?
Yeah, I think you're actually right. Let me give you an example. I talked to one pastor, and down the street they have a big mega church. And so he says, "Well, I'm scared we can't grow because we've got that mega church." And he said, "Well, what's that got to do with you?" People go to a mega church because they want to go to a mega church. Other people don't want to go to a mega church. They want to go to a church like yours. And when I was talking to this pastor, I could see his eyes light up because we put out barriers that stop us from doing the long game. And we have to stop and look, are those barriers really true?
So, Brett, when you think of stagnant, there is a negative connotation to stagnant, but have you been involved in a situation that it actually isn't negative? There's actually like a positive situation taking place that feels to the outsider maybe that it's stagnating, but in fact it's doing something different. Have you been involved, or Steve, have either of you guys been involved in something that perceived incorrectly about stagnation?
Yes, if the idea of stagnation is numeric growth. I have been involved in things that are not numerically growing because I've watched some intentionality in growing deeper, not wider. I would argue that the church that I'm involved with has gone through seasons of that. It's not just to make Brett feel better about the fact that the church isn't growing. I think there are some objective measures to be had as to whether or not people are really growing deeper in their relationship with Christ, in their desire to serve and serve alongside the local church. But it's in those occasions where I feel like that is indeed where you could see some positive in stagnant numeric growth.
Got it. We had a conversation prior to going on mic here that had to do with children being an indicator of energy and growth in a church. And yet, if there aren't, if families aren't coming to a church, and maybe it's an older congregation, Steve, have you, you know, when a church feels that and they desire, deeply desire for youth, and it's just not happening, you know, what would be your encouragement to a pastor that looks at that as stagnation, and what would be your perspective of that?
Well, I think if they're wanting to have kids, you know, middle school, high school, down grade school, that kind of thing, if they're wanting that, they have to have a place for them. Mm. And I think what happens is churches want to have those, but they have no place for these kids. Maybe an example would be we on one side of our church, we put in a great grass area with a fireplace and a basketball court and a gaga pit. And a volleyball and that kind of thing. And now the kids are out there and they're playing and that kind of thing. But if we didn't have any of that, why would the kids want to come? Mm-hmm. Is the way I look at it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's imperative that if whatever the church situation is, if they want kids, if they want seniors, whatever it is, you just have to have a preparation. And it means that you're going to have to collect some money and put it into the church some way so that it meets that need, as well as just, you know, personalities and fellowship and that type of thing.
Yeah. So, Brett, you know, when you think of the statement, you know, minister to the people you have, not the people you want. There's a lot wrapped up into that. You know, unpack that a little bit for us, negatively and positively. What's some thought you have on that?
Sadly, tells a little bit about my character, but I can go toward the negative really quickly there. And I'm glad I'm not a pastor many, many times, because stagnant churches, I think as Steve aptly described, there's at minimum a dispassion, right? It's sort of a lack of passion. Or a comfortableness, a complacency perhaps. And while I would rather minister to someone who's ready to make a life change than someone who has every reason to be transformed and is kind of a season of malaise, it's tough to move those folks. So when I think of stagnation and how to move a congregation, I'm challenged to figure that out. I'm challenged to figure out how it is you take a congregation that perhaps has been vibrant at one time and no longer is. That's a more painful way. I'd much rather turn my attention to the ones that are kind of hungry to learn, hungry to grow. And that's not been the case with many that are seated in the church.
Do you guys, either of you guys, feel there is a connectivity between a church's vibrancy and the board? Is it, in other words, does one lead the other? Is there a correlation between the culture of the board and the culture of the congregation? Is there any connectivity there if I'm a board member, that I have the power to influence positive outcome? A vibrancy, or am I just leading an organization that is going to do what it does regardless of what I say and do?
I see nothing but a connection.
Yeah.
Frankly, my hesitation was simply to how do I emphasize enough? I do believe things rise and fall with leadership. And so if you're seeing stagnation in sort of personal relationship with Jesus Christ, if you're seeing stagnation in your, you know, with individuals who are like, yeah, it's my home church and I go there at least 60% of the time when it's convenient. If that is what represents your leadership, to expect more of your congregation is not possible, very frankly. It's not reasonable. So I do see a huge connection between leadership vibrancy and life and light that's emanating in and through them. And if it's not happening, I don't see how it's possible to emerge from that.
Steve, I've been at Harvest, your church in Brighton, Colorado, and the environment, the building, the campus, its location, all lend itself to interest to visit. And it's really a ministry that encourages, I think, somebody to want to get on the campus. With the churches that don't have that, and you know, we have churches that are around the country that are not in a place that can do that, and so they're working toward what can we do about who we are. We don't have the vibrancy. We lost a lot of our families during COVID, and you know, here we are now at our current condition. What's the path toward vibrancy in that situation? Geography and location and congregation constitution, all that.
Yeah, I have a saying that I have to tell myself, and that is, I own the pulpit. And when I say that, I mean the culture that we want to build, I can build from the pulpit. When we go to the board building, the culture, and my experience, it can be different than anybody else, but every one of those men I've discipled that are on our board, and so we all have that unity in terms of the culture, and our culture is grace. And acceptance, you know, with the caveats. But so I'm kind of going back to your original question, is there a connection between the board and that kind of thing? I think the real connection is the pulpit. And I think our ability as pastors to be able to use the scriptures and describe the type of culture that we want, it'll end up happening. But I go back to... I can't remember who that was. He was talking about vision, and he said it's like a pail with holes in it. It might have been Bill Hybels.
Yeah,
I think it
was Hybels.
He said the problem is when you put water into a pail, it leaks out over time. And so you have to reinforce and reinforce and reinforce that culture. And my experience is, because I know all of these people on my board, we're all agreed. We're in unity with what we want the culture to be.
So I'm hearing two things, Steve, and maybe I'm wrong, so correct me if I'm wrong. I'm hearing both the pulpit in terms of messaging, sort of the consistent messaging, but I'm also hearing sort of that relational component. Because you're in relationship with those who are leading the church, there's a dynamic there that's crucial. Is that true?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. For instance, I try to text 2 to 3 people a day when I get in, just encourage them and that kind of thing. During the service, while the worship's going on, I talk to every person in that auditorium. I just scoot around, hug them, say hi, that kind of thing. And then I think what you're kind of alluding to is our guys have talks with people and build that culture through discussion with people.
Sure, you exemplify the culture that you're trying to create.
Yeah. Exactly. Live it. Yeah. And know that it's going to leak out if we don't keep doing it.
Understood. Hey, Brian, can we return to, you asked me a question and I immediately went to the negative side of the equation.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
I have a hunch that Steve being a pastor is far more compassionate than myself. So I'm curious, Steve, what opportunities do you see in maybe a stagnant or maybe less vibrant church culture to engage your congregation? Right. I know that people go through seasons of life. There's reasons for some of the malaise and stagnancy. What opportunities do you see?
Well, I think the core opportunity is discipleship. with the people that are there, a one-on-one or one-on-two or one-on-three, to build that so that pretty soon you have a multiple staff as a result of discipleship. I don't know any other way around that. But I do think that asking to meet with people and go to lunch together, there's a lot of different ways. I'm an idea guy, and then I suck ideas out of other people, you know, and so and that changes from day to day almost for me, how I want to approach things and what I want to do. But I do really feel like we have to honor the people that are there. You were talking about how some people come 60% of the time. Well, we all have that problem. You know, I have a lot of people that were in the lockdown, and they say, oh, well, I see you every Sunday on YouTube and those kind of things. And it's like, yeah, well, can you come back? So yeah. I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you did. That's helpful.
You know, I know that pastors, I believe a pastor, as he answers the call to go into the pastorate, is going, I believe, with the right intent, is going to into that call and answering that great call to serve and to present the ministry of the gospel and to touch the hearts and lives of people for eternity. And there's probably a handful of really wonderful driving points. And as a pastor gets into their seat and their vocation, and they move forward and it doesn't seem like they're being productive. And I've spoken with enough pastors who say, I feel like I'm running dry. I you know, no one's responding to my ministry. The church down the road or over around the corner is growing and we're shrinking. I hear a real despair in their voice, and there's that connection. And I can't help but think, you know, in Psalms 51, when David says, you know, restore to me the joy of my salvation, that restore that process. When you guys come across pastors who are really downhearted about what they think their church looks like, and maybe even making the connection of their effectiveness as a pastor to the vibrancy of their church, which is probably not a hard connection to make. When you guys see that pastor hurting because of that, is there a word that you would give them, a word of encouragement that supersedes what they're seeing maybe in the vibrancy of their church?
Well, you know, like what I'm coaching a couple pastors right now, young pastors, I'm really talking to them about forgetting the long game for right now and learn to preach and learn to lead and become friends with your congregation and encourage them. And then I think somewhere along the line, they can look after more of the long game. But I think what happens is pastors look at the long game, they look at what it should be, and then they just get discouraged because it's not going to happen right away.
Mm-hmm. That's tough. Yeah, and you can see that brokenheartedness or that lack of confidence that they've followed the right call, you know.
Right.
It's the proverbial, how do you eat an elephant, right? It's one bite at a time, right? You're not going to conquer the world. And I do have those occasions, and I joke about not being a pastor, but I do have great compassion when I hear that brokenness. Like, well, I'm just questioning whether I should be in this. But in reality, my response is often, man, thanks for being faithful in the midst of a culture that is really kind of warring against everything you're trying to be about. Faithfulness does not go unnoticed.
And you've kind of mentioned ideas, and when we think the word mitigate, you know, the word mitigate means ways to avoid. I'm sure that's not the correct definition, but how to avoid, how to with intention avoid. And do you guys think there are mitigation ways that we can avoid? I know, Steve, you were already talking about, you know, if you desire to have young families, build a space for young families. And it's not the old Kevin Costner build it and they'll come thing, because that's not how it works. But I think the idea of, if you desire for something, create the space for something. And let's see what God will do in that. Are there other ways to mitigate, a church that doesn't, that maybe is heading that direction? Are there ways to do things in the ministry leadership that can help mitigate the issue of being non-vibrant and stagnant as a ministry?
Can I swim upstream of that question a little bit?
Yeah, do please.
I'm wondering, is all stagnancy a result of unhealth?
Good question.
My quick answer to your question, Brian, is I think I'd want to go in and diagnose the individual situation, right? What's happening in this local church and this local body of believers? That's the consultant in me, right? Mm-hmm. That wants to get the more accurate picture that's painted. But then I do wonder to what extent stagnancy is a result of unhealth. And if it is it always the same unhealth, right? We talk at the GGF about healthy pastors, healthy boards, healthy churches, right? And within each of those areas where we're striving to be healthier, there's all sorts of subcategories where we might be vibrant in one area and not so vibrant in another. So I don't know, Steve, what's your take on whether or not all stagnancy is a result of unhealth?
I'm with you on that. There's opportunities that come along, and if you capitalize on those opportunities, you grow. If you don't capitalize on them, you don't. But I don't know. It's a hard one. When we say that they're stagnant, that's why I almost like the plateau better, because at a plateau, it's say, okay, here's where we are. Where are we going to do? What are we going to do to change this and pray about it and see if you can change it? Stagnation says we're sick or feels that way, so that we can't get healthy. And so I think that, you know, for instance, here in Brighton, about 2.5% of the people in Brighton go to church. So we're an unreached nation. And so it's been an uphill battle for us just to keep the people, let alone grow. And I read in Christianity Today a while back that people are leaving the church about 20% rate. Used to be 10, now it's 20. So in order to stay the same, you have to be growing at 20%. And so it takes a lot of thought. And like, for instance, for us, going back to the kids, well, we started an Awana program, and now we have over 100 kids coming to Awana, and that only goes up to grade school. And my wife leads a non-Awana, and I lead a want to know with adults on theology and that kind of thing. And so those have come through much discussion and much thinking on how can we do this. I really think it's important in a pastor's life to find a coach. I went to a professional coach for a year, several years back, for a whole year, every other week, because I was getting kind of to feel that stagnancy or that plateau. And I thought maybe I shouldn't be in the ministry, you know, that kind of thing. And so going to him, and I paid him. Yeah, I had the church pay him, and he just would listen and offer advice and that kind of thing. That was good. Other times I've gone to other pastors that have churches larger than mine to see how they operate and could they coach me. And so I just feel like a pastor needs a voice from somebody outside their congregation. Because you can't say some things to your congregation. And so you have to do that outside to ask the real questions and maybe even get some good answers. So I've asked.
That idea of helping a pastor, I think, Brett, even how you turned that conversation, I think what you guys both kind of tease out is stagnation might be a state of mind in regard to where are we and what are we doing? It might be more of a plateau. We might, hey, this is in the life cycle of our ministry. We are in this spot. There's a church that we have down in the Alabama area that used to have a school engaged in it, involved in its campus, and it's no longer there. But the pastor there, Glenn Bocamp, is working to the church is working with its local public schools to do an after school program, and he says our goal is to have a school bag because we realize that's a really good opportunity for us to touch the lives of families. And so, to your point, Steve, the idea of building a space for families is the way to create space for families. You know, there's some intentionality to that. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the goals of this conversation is to encourage our pastors and our board members toward looking into their ministry and not throwing a flag into the ring too quickly. I think that's the wrong throwing a towel in the ring too quickly.
Wow, you are mixing metaphors.
Throwing a flag up, and what I know of both of the ministries you guys are involved with, and each of, I mean, you're more than one ministry, but I think of Harvest Church, and I think of Rush Creek, and I think of the different ministries you men are both involved with. As before we end this discussion, you know, what would you guys both say to our church leaders out there who are feeling like there is a lack of wind in the sail, and they're considering things that maybe are you know, ministry ending considerations? What would you say in that kind of space where you would encourage the heart of those men?
Good question. I like the lens through which Steve is looking at it, and the idea of plateauing. It's not just a kinder, gentler word. It is maybe a more apt of a word than stagnation. But even as he describes the culture in Colorado and the 2.5% that go to church, and the 20% that leave the church, plateauing can look a lot like falling backward year over year over year. And so it feels even more dire than just a plateau that you've reached. Mm-hmm. But I think just some reminders that I think we're used to functioning more in a Christendom model as churches, right? Like we're on, Christianity's on top of culture and we're doing ministry and we should be growing. And in reality, we're a bit more like Babylon right now. And it's like, how do you minister? How do you become a faithful presence? How do you dive into the people that God has placed in your presence and disciple them, encourage them along in their journey? Because God's not surprised by the place your local church is at. He's got you there. And I think you said it, Steve. Right? You got to see that opportunity in that. Easier said than done. You can't just say to a pastor, look, see the opportunity. But by the same token, there is truth to it, right? God's not surprised by the place where your local church is. So what is he trying to teach? Not the church, but the individuals within the church, the leadership within the church.
Yeah. And I would like to talk about something, and if I'm going off course here, you can stop me.
Okay.
I think one of the problems that smaller churches and even churches our size have is funding. Mm-hmm. And that is, how do we fund, like I mentioned about we need to create a space. Well, that costs money. Okay. So what we've done is we have Aurora School District. It's a suburb of Denver, meeting at our church on Monday and Tuesdays for homeschoolers. And they pay us about $4,700 a month to be there for 9 months. Well, churches our size and smaller, that's decent money.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Hill, who is in charge of our youth, he does TNT firework stands 2 weeks before the 4th. And then the 4th this year, we netted $80,000. $80,000. And so that's the youth budget.
Selling fireworks.
Yeah, selling fireworks at 2 weeks is a real headbanger doing it. But when it's over and they net out 80,000, they have money for food. They have money to go places and do things. And the rest of the church doesn't touch that money. We just keep it for the youth. So we get people in because our youth group, man, serves food. And they'll take us to a restaurant, or we're going to go caving, or we're going to, you know, whatever it may be, go water skiing or whatever. And so it's a pretty exciting thing. And then Bobby's really good at apologetics. So he helps them survive college.
That's awesome.
So I don't know if that's off a target.
You
know, but
I don't think that's off target at all, Steve. Yeah, I'm glad you raised that issue because, frankly, momentum builds on momentum, right? And part of that momentum is finances, very frankly. And if you're seeing a diminished congregation, you're seeing a diminished offering plate, right?
Yeah.
And I'm glad you raised that point. I'm not sure it's the solution for everyone, but Rush Creek has had a similar posture, I would say, really just in the last 10 years. We also have a facility. We have a posture now that facility sitting idle doesn't benefit anyone. We've kind of overcome the fact that we don't need things pristine on Sunday morning if we know we've availed our facility to other ministries that are reaching out to the community. So we host homeschool co-ops. They pay some money. There are some that we offer our facility for free. And we partner. We're also not of the mind that we need to create every ministry that's worthy of doing. There's some great community partners, and to bring some of our volunteers alongside those ministry partners, that's a viable way to generate some momentum as well.
And I think going along with that, because I'm from the business world, I was 12 and a half years into the church before I started doing a full-time salary. We always looked at everything as ROI, return on investment. What kind of return on investment are we getting? And I think church boards should really ask that question when we're doing. And so the return on investment may be people, it may be money, it may be support. I personally have the idea that I don't want to have our congregation pay for everything. I want to figure out how we can make money. So that they aren't burdened down with that. Like, for instance, right now our leadership team is working on the idea of taking, we have 5 acres vacant and we're using 5 acres. And so we want to turn that other 5 acres into a park and then rent that park out to 2 cities that are dying to have little league football and that kind of thing going on. And then they pay us. And so that'll at least pay for the watering and maybe extra, whereas a congregation would have to do that if they couldn't, you know, lease their land out or whatever.
Creative.
So I think return on investment's huge.
Yeah, creative use of the resource. As we get ready to close here, and I'm going to ask you guys about maybe other resources or websites or books you might be suggesting. But one of the things that I want our listener audience to appreciate about the two men on this current podcast is both Pastor Steve at the Harvest Church in Brighton, Colorado, and Brett at Rush Creek Bible Church are involved in churches that have a vibrancy. And not every church has the capacity to maybe be at a large size. We're not talking about congregational size here. We're talking about congregational vibrancy, and I want to invite our listening audience to be able to reach out to Pastor Steve and to Brett. And we'll at the end of this, we'll at the link, we'll give both emails for these churches and these pastors to be able to have some connectivity. Before that, though, before we adjourn here, guys, are there books or resources that you might suggest for pastors and board members to consider? Anything you have read or accessed that have just been encouraging? Steve, you mentioned a little bit about finding a coach, maybe even talking about how one would go about that?
Well, as far as the coaching goes, I just went and asked, went over to the church, and I have a church 2 miles down the road they have about 800 people to 1,000. So, and at the time they had 1,600. So I went to the pastor and I just asked him, okay, could we meet and you coach me or listen to me? And so I did that for a while. And that was good. I asked a few other pastors, but the one that I paid was really good because I knew he'd be there every other week. And I saw him at a conference and my wife, she's a dear heart. She said, "That's the guy you want, honey." And so I went up to him. He had a church at 2,500 in South Denver. And so he said, "Well, I coach new pastors, but I never coached a seasoned pastor." I said, "Well, I'll train you."
Train the trainer.
We laughed. And so I said, "I just need somebody to listen to me. And then maybe you can shoot ideas you've already worked through that I haven't worked through at my level yet."
What a great word of encouragement for pastors who feel isolated and lonely in their challenge. Brett, what about any other? And Steve, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Any other resources, guys, you might point our pastors and board members towards?
So, maybe an exercise. Every couple of years, I've done this at certainly Rush Creek, other locations as well, and it's a simple exercise. In fact, I just went through it with the staff. I'm passionate about board development and staff development, working on those things together. There's a reality to the fact that, yes, I want to admit up front that maybe we're a slightly larger church than some of the people represented here or listening to this podcast. But I think this works in any setting, and that is ask these two questions. What would we in the community be accused of valuing? Like basically what are we known for? What would we be accused of valuing? And then the second question is, what do we want to be valued for in the community that we serve? Because it all comes down to core values that are shared amongst the leadership. That's what you can build on. You can build on the things that are shared core values. But you also need to have sort of a reality check, which is the accusation of, which is, it's a harsh word of saying, what do people say about you? What would they say you value as a congregation or as a church? So that might just be a starting point, but it's always been a helpful exercise when I've worked through that.
Let me give book you were talking about, maybe a book. I think the best thing that ever happened in my life was to read Volunteer Revolution by Bill Hybels. He and I saw him on a conference talk about it, and I got his book and read it. And the bottom line is we are inviting our congregation into the game. That we're playing, that may be foreign language, I'm not sure, but into what we're trying to do as a church and that kind of thing. And he does such a good job of convincing you when you get done with that book that you're wrong in not asking people to volunteer. And I actually got the audio so I could just listen to it from time to time. To kind of re-up, maybe once every 2 years, I listen to it to re-up, because I think one of the problems, and especially in a smaller, but I think all churches, is asking somebody to volunteer. And that's like asking them for money. Those things are really hard, asking for money and asking for volunteer. We have to learn to do both.
Yeah. Especially because as a pastor, I think they find that, that these guys are busy. My families are busy in my church, and who am I to ask somebody? It's my job. I'm getting paid to do everything, and it's an easy trap to fall into for these leaders.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, guys, there are so many nuggets here that we're going to unravel it or unearth one day, because this issue of the pastor in our boards feeling confident in the place they are, I think both of you guys speak to, and we haven't really spoken to this point, but I think you both reveal that just being able to recognize where you're at as a church and, you know, is it a plateau? Are we at a place that, hey, we're just a bit here for a bit? Or is it maybe a bit more of a stagnation where we're moving backward and we're losing energy in the fight? So there's so much here. I'm grateful to our listening audience. I just hope this was a real significant encouragement to you, and I look forward to giving more resources toward this and future podcasts as well. So, hey, Pastor Steve and Brett, thank you both for being part of this thing.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, always.